Raiders Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Play forced out to center. Here's a chance. 3-on-1 to the line for Buffalo. Pass across. Scores! Great play to Doan in front. And the Sabres, Benson and Doan, connect for the first goal of this series. It's 1-0. Pass to the bumper spot. That one back in front. Scores! Side of the net. Hot Wheels McLeod parked in the right spot, and the Sabres take a 2-0 lead. In the Montreal zone, fires a shot, scores! Welcome back to the greenway of doing things in the playoffs, and the Sabres take a 3-1 lead with 16:28 to go. Here's Byram right up the middle with a shot, scores! Bo Byram! Bangs it home with 10:59 remaining in the second period, and the Buffalo Sabres are up 4-1 in game one of round two.
Sabres up 1-0 after the win last night against Montreal, and there's another potential win ahead for the captain, Rasmus Dahlin. Welcome into Sabres Live. We've been talking about award finalists, and we know that Rasmus is already a finalist for the Bill Masterton Award, and we've discussed that at length. But today, the Norris finalists have become available to us, and Rasmus Dahlin, for the first time in his career, is a Norris finalist alongside Cale Makar and Zach Werenski. So what an incredible season to date for Dahlin.
Yeah, and we talked to Pierre LeBrun on the show yesterday, and he said he had Dahlin in his top three of the Norris, and obviously I mentioned Werenski and Makar potentially being in there, which leaves a guy like Quinn Hughes outside and others that are very deserving to be in that conversation.
Evan Bouchard needs to be in the conversation because you need to be reminded that Erik Karlsson recently won a Norris, and it was almost entirely built upon the point total that he had, right? So, yeah, this is an impressive feat when you consider those who are not among the finalists.
So it's interesting because I think that making the playoffs for the Sabres really gave Dahlin that boost. They'll say, hey, he has arrived now. He is a Norris finalist. But a guy like Zach Werenski is not in the playoffs, but it's the numbers, the offense with Werenski the last 2 years. It has been Cale Makar and Zach Werenski the last two seasons that have set has been sitting at the top of the points getter by defensemen in the NHL. So, deserving Werenski, deserving Makar, but very, very deserving of Rasmus Dahlin and everything he's done this year, everything he's gone through. I talked about not just the Masterton, but the Mark Messier Leadership Award, all these things. Mm-hmm. I think Dahlin deserves to have a bigger look, and he's getting it now.
Yes, and outside of Makar having won it twice in the last 4 years, if you go back the last decade, there has been a lot of variety when it comes to the winners of the Norris. Dahlin had previously ranked as high as 8th, 15th, and just last year, 6th in Norris Trophy voting. If I was to do spontaneous trivia with you in Sabres history, because they've never had a Norris Trophy winner, give me 5 Sabres that you think have accumulated Norris votes over the years.
Well, I'm going to say Phil Housley.
Phil Housley?
That's an easy one. I'm going to say Brian Campbell.
Brian Campbell.
Okay, that's a good start. I'm going to go with Alexei Zhitnik.
Alexei Zhitnik actually landed 12th 1 year in Norris voting, so you're 3-for-3.
3-for-3. I would think Mike Ramsey will
be on
there.
Mike Ramsey got as high as 7th, yes.
Okay, now you're asking me like some of the... Oh, okay, producer Sam is
coming with the suggestions. And what is the one thing that
so you... So he said Jim Schoenfeld.
Yes,
so
and...
This is why we need a control room camera, so Sammy, you can press and you can actually be on
not
the show.
Not to mention his playoff beard is coming in very handsomely.
Very good.
Schoenfeld was a finalist in 1980, which again speaks to how
greatest,
dominant that 80 team was that ultimately came up short against the Islanders. But it was loaded top to bottom with incredible talent. So, yeah, there's just a sample.
Lindy Ruff was never a Norris finalist?
No, but he did have a pretty significant...
played both. He played forward and D, right?
As we reel it back in, and we'll talk more about the Norris finalist and everything else around the NHL with Darren Dreger later on in the show, but obviously, tip of the cap to Dahlin for being a finalist with Makar and Werenski. But I think when we're talking about the Sabres and the Canadiens here, and it's 1-0 Buffalo in the series, Lindy was almost... intentionally forgetful, I thought, when he was dealing with the media the other day, you know, once they had clinched a spot and they knew it was going to be Montreal, and he was getting questions about having gone head-to-head to them before, and he was being nostalgic, and he kind of downplayed the 83 series, which was his first foray into it as a player. And if you look at the box scores from back then, like when Lindy came into the NHL and was with this group, as it was changing over a little bit from the French Connection era, and then had a little bit more, I would say, muscle in a different way. Mm-hmm. But Lindy was on the score sheet and or in the box so much when you're talking about Buffalo and Boston series, and then that Montreal, you know, sweep that the Sabres had, a three gamer back in 83. So I'm glad you brought it up, because Lindy needs to be remembered in really positive ways in his playing role, even though there was always so much star power above him. And that kind of brings it back to what we saw last night.
We're going to think about Lindy as a coach, because it's been for so many years in the generation. But yes, he was the reason why he got into coaching is because he was that type of player that got involved in playing different position and being physical, trying to get some points, knowing how to play the game. So that's why, you know, he got into coaching, and that's why he's been so successful in his second career.
And isn't that what we saw last night from a coach's standpoint? Yeah. Even though there was critical self-evaluation from players and the coaching staff, and that nothing is perfect on the heels of a 4-2 series opening win against Montreal, when you look at the offense last night, who it came from, and even some of the names that we probably didn't touch a ton on last night in our post-game coverage, what did you think as we look back to the night that was?
Well, I thought there was a really good start by the Buffalo Sabres. First run, a penalty, you know, Benson getting into, you know, Hudson gets a tripping penalty. The power play did not performed well at that first power play, and I really think that's still a point of concern for me, despite the fact they went 2-for-3. But you know what? That play off the wall to Benson that led to a 3-on-1, I get it. Lane Hudson tripped in front of the Montreal's bench. That may not happen too many times in this series, right? And you're not going to get that. But it's just the fact that the Sabres were making simple plays out of the defensive zone. You win a draw, up the wall, get your wingers to go through, and then try to win a puck battle, puck race. And I think the Sabres did that a lot in the early going. Then Montreal kind of had some zone time. When you look at the even strength offensive zone possession time, Montreal had 2 more minutes than Buffalo at even strength in zone possession time.
Well, that would be largely third period and final couple of minutes of the second, for sure.
And I also think in the first period, there was a moment where Montreal tried to push a little bit, but then the Sabres scored that second power play goal, and it kind of took a lot out of Montreal going up 2-0, something they had not experienced in the first round, being down by 2 goals at any moment.
Right, and I think when you know you look at what happened after the Doan goal from Benson, which was a terrific assist, obviously the McLeod goal on the power play from Benson and Doan.
What about that angle?
Well, it's...
His feet are below the goal line.
I mean, obviously, it wouldn't have happened if he was a right shot. He had to be a left shot in this situation. But even then, it was ultra tight. But it doesn't happen without the second effort. It's a broken play, as it often is in front of the net. And it's just that last second reach by Benson to push it across. Your peripheral is the most important thing in a time like this. And he knows that he's there. And it's just like, this is not a tape-to-tape play. This is me just extending it. But I think the greater significance here, with McLeod getting on the board and then later having a primary assist, is this will be the most critical element of production. My opinion is having McLeod get back to the similar numbers that he posted in consecutive personal bests over his last his only two regular seasons with the Sabres. There was a natural drop off in the goal scoring, but we've talked a lot about will he shoot, will he not. It just seems like that one presented no option, right?
No, he had to shoot.
And I think the best option for the Sabres, going into last night, you were looking at, can Zucker finally break through? Can McLeod break through? Can Quinn break through? All three of them could have last night, and that's what's most important.
Yeah, especially Jack Quinn. I think he had like 4 like glorious opportunities. He hit the post a couple of times. But when the McLeod scored that goal, the first thing I thought, and I didn't even tell you because I think I got too busy eating my gummy bears or my cupcakes or whatever we had on the press box. It was delicious.
There was a lot.
But you know how Leon Draisaitl scores power play goals from that spot all the time?
A little further out, but
like feet almost on the goal line, that angle. I'm guaranteeing you that this is something that Draisaitl would put pucks down on the goal line in practice, and McLeod, his time in Edmonton, saying, mm-hmm. oh, you know what? I could find myself in that position. I'm going to do tons of repetition, reps, right? Because that's not an easy play mm-hmm. to be able to, as you're drifting lower, closer to the goal line, your right foot is below the goal line,
yeah.
and you're able to find that angle. Huge goal, by the way. A good 20-second power play by the second unit. Another good 25-second power play by the second unit that led to Byram's goal in the second period.
So is there a story from an individual nature that is bigger? I mean, ultimately, Greenway scores the game-winning goal in the second period. It's a shot that did have a little bit of a ramp effect from the Montreal defender.
Yeah.
But describe it just in the importance for Greenway and or the depth picture right now for Buffalo.
Well, the fourth line was playing well. They were like initiating contact on the forecheck. They were creating speed on the transition. But it's always good to score. It's always good to have points. And when you look at the way that this line was rewarded, Lindy Ruff, Jordan Greenway, they talked about this being his best game of the season. It has been a very, very long season for Jordan Greenway with injuries. But you know what? This is now the benchmark, saying like, okay, this is what you can do. Mm-hmm. Continue to do the same thing. And I do feel this was one of the better games for Kozak in the middle of the ice. He was definitely in and around the net a ton. Malenstein, we've seen, do well all season long. He actually had one of his, highlight real goal against the Montreal Canadiens this year mm-hmm. when he toe-dragged around Fowler. So you're looking at that line. And the depth of the Sabres is important in this series. But I really felt it was going to be the McLeod line and the Norris line, the middle. But now you're adding another element. And I really didn't think Montreal had a response for what the fourth line was doing. I'm not saying they're going to go out and score four goals a game.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a big goal. That's an important piece of beating a team in a seven-game series.
Byram continues to produce. What should our view be of Bo right now, where he's at in his career, what he's accomplished this season, what he had already previously accomplished in his career, and especially when we talk so much about Buffalo's top four? Are we literally like on this little spinny wheel where on any given day you've got a different number one guy? And which is a kind of ridiculous statement to say when we're talking about Dahlin just being named a Norris finalist. But I think the go-to or kind of clutch aspect that we've seen from Byram and Samuelson this year leads to this conversation.
Well, it was Samuelson, Dahlin, and Byram all played about, 21 minutes last night. So it was a rotation, a trio of guys that could be on the ice at any moment. And with Bo Byram, it's funny because when he was in Colorado, you could see the talent.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a Kel McCarr, right? Mm-hmm. And there was a Devontae's playing top line minutes. And then Byram comes here and you're like, oh, you know what? Like, what's that going to look like for Bo Byram? Is he going to get power play time? Well, you know what? He's getting second power play time, but it's almost the most productive mm-hmm. unit right now because Bo is so good in entries and walking the blue line and getting some shots through. Now, I think a guy like Kel McCarr and Devontae's in Colorado probably said they benefited from having a Bo Byram on the team.
Sure.
Rasmus Dahlin and Matthias Samuelson and Owen Power are probably sitting here and saying, we wouldn't be where we are right now if it wasn't for Bo Byram.
Mm-hmm.
In the regular season, one of three Sabres over 40 points in the year with Dahlin and Samuelson. But his playoffs, four goals already, which is a franchise high in a playoff season.
Tied for.
I mean, I would anticipate like we're seeing number five and six potentially before,
mm-hmm.
Before game five of this series, whatever. Like, I think that he's feeling it offensively.
It's just another reminder of, as Shayna Goldman, who will presumably be with us tomorrow in her
yes.
Friday time spot, one of her favorite crutches to say is, who's to say? And
who's
I think that was the reminder of last summer. Like, who's to say? Who's to know how this is all going to play out? When, if they get that contract done with Byram? Thankfully, it became a when they got it done with Byram. But who was to say what his production was actually going to be this year? And again, I'll go back to the clutch factor. I think Byram's just been so good for this entire group and for himself personally to continue on a terrific path. Now,
I hate to say it because we do this show throughout the summertime and we look at the roster.
I hate to say that too.
We build it and then we're like, who's going to... There was no mention last summer at all of having a Power Byram pair. Because it was like, well, we're going to see Darlene and Byram together. Yeah. And we're going to see Power and Kesselring. And that's going to maybe move Samuelson to the third pair. And we'll see what happens. Well, you know what? Always expect the unexpected was the thing Mitch Korn, the great goalie coach, told me my very first training camp in Buffalo.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use this whenever we do summer shows for next year. Always expect the unexpected. And that was Bo Byram and Owen Power as a pair this year.
Will we learn anything from our verbal diarrhea last summer?
Peyton Krebs, Zach Benson, Bo Byram, Alex Lyon, whatever.
Holy
there
cow.
Is so
Alex,
many
thank
things.
You for the segue, because, again, how do you win a game in the postseason? Everybody. Alex Lyon is now up to 4-1. The save percentage stands at .950, and the goals against average is 1.3. Overall league ranking, the Sabres are second in goals against. They're fourth in save percentage. Lyon had a great stop on Hudson in the first period before they got the game-opening goal.
Yes.
And that was, I don't know, if you were looking for moments of like, oh, cool, how's he going to respond to dispatching a Boston in round number one. There was an early example of it, and there was more late because the Habs were getting the bulk of the shots. Take us inside what you, from that position, are seeing with Alex.
So the Montreal Canadiens put up about a 3.5 expected goals, which is another goal and a half saved above expectation. We said, you know, when you look at the goaltenders this year, Linus Ullmark and Freddie Anderson were 1-2 in goals save above expectation per 60, basically per game. Lyon was number three. He's continuing to put these quality starts together. And I do feel that Lane Hudson save, even though it just cut the tip of his pad and hit the crossbar, it's a save.
It's a save.
It hit the pad. Without the pad, it's in the net, right? But there was a save on Dano in that first period. There was a save on Demidov.
Is that these, the Dano run. Was, there was one also right on the doorstep of the crease. Was that the Dano one?
There's Dano was like a lefty on the left side of Lyon. He pushed across on the back door. And there was Demidov right in slot, right like 2 feet outside of the crease.
That's the one.
That he had the one. He had a save on, I think it was a Slavkovsky play in the third period. I mean, you're looking at the one that fluttered, hit him in the face. You're looking at the body control of Alex Lyon right now, and it is about as good as you would want to be. There's no wasting energy in anything that he does. Even when he plays the puck, and it drives me crazy, and now you're paying attention because he does the one-hand thingy. He's not wasting energy in it. I wish he did sometimes, but he's not, which is the way he plays the game.
You did not have to include me in this evaluation of anyone, let alone Alex right now.
We're a duo. I'm including you in everything.
All right, quickly through playoff.
How does it feel that your birthday was yesterday and now you're, a day after?
Okay, thank you for the reminder. Not that there wasn't enough of that talk yesterday on social, but thank you for all the incredibly kind greetings. So now, another game winner on my birthday. So we've had four of them in my lifetime from a Sabre standpoint. Rene Robert in overtime in 75. Perreault didn't have the winner. Our good friend Derek Smith had the winner in a must-win game four against the Islanders in 1980. But I mentioned Perreault because he had 3 goals and 1 assist in that particular game. So I was undoubtedly giddy at school the next day. Jochen Hecht had the winner against the Rangers in 07. And that was to advance to the next round. And, of course, Greenway last night. So I'm very grateful. You know what else I was grateful for?
I remember Jokin's number now, 55.
What?
I didn't remember Jokin's number yesterday when you said that. So now I remember 55.
That was a surprising development. Speaking of numbers, let's look at the odds here. Eastern Conference and Stanley Cup odds, where Buffalo stands today. How do you, does this look right to you? Carolina at -210 and the Sabres at +340 to win the East?
Carolina is 6-0 in the playoffs right now. And, you know, they got game three of their second round series tonight against Philly in Philadelphia. I think Carolina's looked great. There's always the, can Freddie Anderson keep going and whatever? But Carolina is the favorite. Buffalo is right behind them. But when you look at the odds to win the Stanley Cup, Colorado Avalanche are +165, Carolina +170. The Sabres moved into third place, tied with Vegas at +950. They were +1100 entering the series. The Montreal Canadiens were actually +1000. The Canadiens were a little favored, and then it became even. But now Montreal dropped to fifth, and the Sabres are tied for third.
And correct me if I'm wrong. When we were looking at this in like March and April, it was around plus 2,200 and then moved up to like plus 1,800 for quite a while.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I would think because the Sabres are the best team. But now when you get to the playoffs, you're looking at the path to the Stanley Cup, right?
Exactly.
And so Colorado, who is, you know, up in their series again. I mean, they've been fantastic. Mm-hmm. They're looking, okay, if they get by, you know, the Minnesota Wild, well, they would get Vegas or Anaheim. You know, it's a, I don't want to say it's light. It's the playoffs. You get to the conference finals, you deserve it. Mm-hmm. But the path of Colorado is not the same as anybody in the Eastern Conference.
Real quick, before we hit around the National and then Darren Dreger coming up, and again, if you missed it off the top, Dahlin is a Norris finalist for the first time, which is incredibly exciting news for him and for the organization on the heels of a win last night in Game 1 against Montreal. One word for Game 2 tomorrow.
Two words.
Okay.
Puck management. And I think that that's something that Marty said we touched on for the Montreal Canadiens, because the Sabres in Game 1 had 10 unmanned rushes. They only had 18 in six games against the Boston Bruins, because the Boston Bruins would just like dump it in and make you have to come up 200 feet. Buffalo was able to benefit from some turnovers that Montreal did have either in the offensive zone or in the neutral zone, and that is going to be a key for Montreal. I still think puck management is a key for Buffalo, because Montreal can turn it on, especially with their top line and counterattack. And the reason why Sabres were so good is for most of that Game 1, they managed the puck well. They didn't turn it over. They had a couple of mishaps, mm-hmm. and Montreal did come up the ice, but that puck management is going to be huge. So it's a two-word
I like
Thursday.
It. I like it, and the Ducks liked their road performance again last night against Vegas. We dive in on their offense. It was from the two that, you know, moving forward are going to be, outside of Cutter Gauthier, the most important in the franchise.
Yes.
Not unlike what Getzlaff and Perry were back in the day, and that's Beckett Seneca and Leo Carlson. Both contributed, and both were undoubtedly mildly frustrated the way Game 1 of the series had gone and the way this one started, because they weren't breaking through against Carter Hart, but they stayed with it and played an excellent game.
Well, the way that it started is Vegas took a penalty hurdle for high sticking, and then before that penalty was over, Mitch Marner, a delay of game puck over glass, and then Eichel, double minor. There was 5-on-3. There was like so many power plays, and they couldn't score. They had so many chances. Carter Hart was fantastic in that, but you want to score goals. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they broke through in the second period, were able to add an empty net goal. They gave up a goal late, but that was a really solid game by Anaheim. They could have won that game 7-1 yesterday. It was a 3-1 game, but it was that dominant by Anaheim, in my opinion, in Game 2 in Vegas.
Yeah, it was sadly disturbing, obviously, for Dostal to lose the shutout so late. I mean, we saw
10 seconds.
There was 1954. It was
unbelievable. It was a face-off in the defensive zone with like 15 seconds, and then that puck went in with like 5.
Yeah. Only time ever, maybe, Mark Stone, no emotion upon scoring a goal.
Yeah, well, I mean, they knew the game was over.
I know, but we always talk about his over-exuberance in celebration.
I mean, he shot it from, you know, the shot was taken from the half wall, and then he was in front for the deflection. And,
yeah.
You know, but that, to
but
me,
that series is 1-1. Very interesting right now.
Very interesting.
I love it.
Because Anaheim, like, they surprised me against the Edmonton Oilers in the first round, mm-hmm. and being able to play that game and overcome some deficit and pounce back. And this is a totally different game with Vegas. Mm-hmm. Tight, low-scoring games. But they're still, like, being able to find a way to produce and to create offensively.
Yeah, it's probably a dream scenario, quite frankly, for Joel Quenneville to have it be different and to be able to reinforce the need to be different.
Yeah.
And the first round was interesting and surprising from both teams, Anaheim and Edmonton, in that series, because it was disappointingly surprising from Edmonton's standpoint that they couldn't match or even come close to what they had done in the previous two seasons. Now Vegas, Anaheim 1-1, Colorado's up 2-0 in Minnesota. Same thing for Carolina as they look to go up 3-0 tonight against Philadelphia, and the Sabres try to take both on home ice to open the series against Montreal with the game tomorrow here at KeyBank Center. One quick note, just and we'll dive a little deeper, undoubtedly, with Darren here in the next segment. But salary cap is going to be exactly where we were hearing that it would be for this coming season at $104 million.
So in January, the NHL came out and said, this is the projection for the next few years. We believe the cap will go up $8.5 million from this season to next, meaning it would go up to $104 million. That's exactly what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And then it looks like it could go up $9.5 million in 2 years to go to $113.5 million. And that was the projection the league had given the teams over the last 2 years. I mean, they don't miss on those projections. No. They have a lot of people on it. So for everybody who's like, oh, the cap's going to be $104 million. The GMs, the leagues, the presidents, whatever, they already knew it was going to be 104 a year and a half ago when the league finally said the cap was going to continue to go up. Now, right. We were out of the COVID flat cap era. So a lot of teams are going to have massive space on their cap for next year. Just there may not be massive players to go get because everybody's re-signing with their teams because there's the room.
Well, we can dive in with Darren Dreger on that coming up. Of course, don't forget that our coverage around these Sabre playoff games continues just like it's been all year. Even though the games are nationally televised right now, we continue with pre- and post-game coverage here on MSG and all the Sabre social platforms. So very portable wherever you are. You can have the opportunity to tune in for the Buick GMC game night, and that leads you into the action. And as soon as it's done, we'll be back on with our Lexus post-game show. So we'll break down everything and give it to you from a Sabre vantage point. Right now, Buffalo up 1-0 in the series. Darren Dreger coming up.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right, thank you once again in advance for your ongoing participation in the 50-50 raffle. We got another one coming up for Game 2 tomorrow night inside KeyBank Center, but you don't have to wait till the game. If you're anywhere in the state right now, you can buy the tickets. Scan the QR code on the screen or go to sabres.com/50-50. We have a guaranteed jackpot of $100,000. It was close to $200,000 last night. We've seen $500,000. We've seen almost $400,000 multiple times. All of this presented by Northtown Automotive. And, of course, the proceeds from these 50-50 raffles go through the Sabres Foundation, get redistributed through our community, and it has been quite the hot commodity on game nights this year. And again, the reminder, you don't have to be in the building. You can get your tickets now in advance of Game 2 tomorrow night. So we've got 6:30 pregame coverage tomorrow night right here on MSG and our social platforms.
I just want to give a shout out because you talk about Sabres Foundation, and Razor and I went for a visit to the Seneca Street Community Development right down here from the arena. Mm-hmm. It's an after-school program. Kids go there, and they were gifted hockey sticks and net and balls and stuff like that for. And we there was face paint, and we signed autograph. And they're an organization that benefits from the Sabres Foundation. Yeah. And the people were fantastic. So that was a great visit by Razor and myself. And the whole community relation and everybody from KeyBank, too. Yeah. They were there, the KeyBank Foundation. So that was great.
Well, it continues. It's always been a staple of it, a team and its tie-in with the community. Rasmus Dahlin has certainly been noted for that. Now he's a Norris Trophy finalist for his on-ice contributions this year, and the captain has his team in a 1-0 lead against Montreal heading into Game 2 tomorrow night. Darren Dreger from TSN, our hockey insider, joins us once again. Dregs, great to have you with us. Just a quick thought, or longer, on this year's finalists for the Norris and the fact that Rasmus Dahlin is one of the three.
Yeah, and deservedly so. I think that we can all agree on that. I will be curious to see the rundown of the Norris Trophy finalists from all of those who have the privilege of voting, and I'm pleased to be one of those. It's a process. We've talked about it before. Rasmus Dahlin was high on my list right out of the gate, and I just like the way he plays the game, and we saw evidence of that in the opener of the series last night. You know, he's got that kind of, I mean, aside from the skill set, he has that innate ability where you want to cross-check him in the face lots of times. You know, just because he can get under your skin. He's physical.
Yeah.
He defends well. Like, the leadership qualities, on and on and on and on it goes. And when I think of, and I've told you about my process before, and I won't bore you, but I go to former Norris Trophy winners, and I do it varying points of the year. because to me, it's important to acknowledge the season in its entirety. And, you know, I'll tip my hand a little bit here because I will get criticized after the fact. I didn't see Evan Bouchard of the Edmonton Oilers as a top five. Like, he's in that conversation, obviously, but it's mostly because of the second half of the season that he had. You know, I don't know that you should be able to wipe away the first 15 or 20 games when you're making mistake after mistake after mistake and it ends up in your net. I mean, the Norris Trophy, even though it's drifted away many years ago into being, you know, honoring the most offensive defenseman, that's not the spirit of the award. It's not. And this year was difficult because Rasmus was right up there. Werenski, absolutely right up there. Someone identified to me, and this isn't a knock on Cale Makar. I guess it's somewhat of a balance if you look at Bouchard, if you look at Lane Hutson. If you study those players shift by shift, the offensive guys, what you recognize is, hey, they all make mistakes. Maybe it's different in Canada because when Evan Bouchard makes a mistake, man, we're all over it. It's on every highlight reel, you know, north of the border. That's just the way it is. And maybe Makar doesn't get that same level of treatment. But I digress here. For me, I love the crop this year because you've got good, really good star all-round defensemen like Rasmus Dahlin, who very much are deserving of this level of recognition.
Dregs, were you on the panel yesterday with TSN for the post-game of the Habs? You were, right? So
the hot zone, Marty. Call it what it is. It's called the hot zone.
The hot zone. You guys do a long post-game hot zone with plenty of sound. Duffer and I were doing our own hot zone in the studio after the game as well. So when you were doing the hot zone and talking about Dahlin and talking about that group of defense with the Sabres, Byram scoring another goal, do you think that is the one thing that separates the Buffalo Sabres to a lot of other teams in the NHL right now in the playoffs, and especially the Canadiens, that top four on the back end?
Yeah, it's tough to beat, isn't it? It really is. And sure, there was a mistake made. I think it was Owen Power on the one goal there. But, I mean, we're splitting hairs when we get to this point, second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Just everything about the approach. I thought Alex Lyon was really good again. Montreal admitted that they didn't have the start that they wanted. Obviously, they fall very quickly, 2-0. I think that there's a lot of things that went into that start, though. And for me, it starts with the defense and how quickly they transition the puck. It looked to me like the Canadiens at times felt like they were a little bit overwhelmed by the overall pace and the attack of the Buffalo Sabres. And, you know, we saw rush chance after rush chance after rush chance. And that's not something that the Montreal Canadiens really had to deal with a lot in their seven-game series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. So it was either Montreal did a better job in that series in containing and breaking up that transition game so, you know, that the Lightning couldn't establish that attack, or it's Buffalo just being better in those areas. But they certainly were in the opener of the series, and that, for me, starts with Buffalo's top four on defense.
Who would be your front runner right now for the Conn Smythe?
Ooh,
that's a good one. Well, the jury is obviously still out, so it's so early. The way that Logan Stankoven got going for the Carolina Hurricanes in the first round against Ottawa, I was like, man, if this kid keeps it up, and he's still going. Yeah. And I made this point in the hot zone last night after Montreal and Buffalo's game. And again, we're just seeing the early stages of this series. But, and maybe it's not the way they play, but maybe it is in the chemistry that's established. I do see some similarities in that second line of the Carolina Hurricanes, where you've got the undeniable chemistry now of Hall and Stankoven and Jackson Blake. Yeah. And what I'm getting and seeing from Donan Benson, especially, and Norris. Yeah. So let's see how, you know, what adjustments. Marty Saint Louis wouldn't talk about him post-game. Why would he? I mean, why would he show his hand in any way? And he did admit that he's got to rewatch the game and look at some of the areas that they've got to clean up. But, you know, historically, we know that the Stanley Cup is often won by the teams that maybe don't have the obvious emerge, you know, because your top line guys normally will neutralize each other. So who else is going to step up? I think that Zach Benson is just a fun kid to watch.
Oh, yeah.
I do. And, you know, the swagger he plays with, the edge that he plays with. I mean, we talk about big moments and how these young developing stars don't seem to be overwhelmed anymore. Well, he's exhibit A for me, at least in watching, you know, and he was good in the opening round against Boston. Don't get me wrong, but he stepped up his game for me in a big way last night.
A big Westerner that traveled the carnivals in the summertime. If you want to go back and watch Embedded on the Sabres, and he would go to cities with his family, setting up like the fair and the carnivals, and then he'd go to hockey school while they would. Benson has been fantastic. It's a lot of fun. Talking about Westerners, we had when you're not doing the hot zone, you're doing the insiders and all of that. We had Pierre LeBrun on the show yesterday. He talked about the Toronto situation and them winning the lottery. But I want to flip it to the Vancouver Canucks because they don't have a GM. They're searching for a GM, and they were hoping to get the number one overall pick. They get third in the whole conversation, now dropping two spots. But what's the GM search looking like in Vancouver and that situation? Yeah.
They're whittling it down, but, you know, even as late as Tuesday when Jim Rutherford, who also announced, by the way, that he's stepping away from his existing title of president, he will take on an advisory role. He acknowledged, I think he said they were down to five. But now that the draft lottery is passed, I feel like there's less of a sense of urgency in Vancouver. But it's also an important distinction to note that because Rutherford is stepping away from his title as the overseer of hockey operations in Vancouver, it will be the owner, Francesco Aquilini, who ultimately makes the hire, who hires the general manager. And I think that's why Pierre Dorion, with all due respect to Pierre, has lasted this long in the process, is because he interviewed very, very well, and there seemed to be, at least I'm told, a connection with Aquilini. Now, I don't know that that means that he is the front runner. It's his job to lose. You know, where's Adams in all of this? But it sounds like they're down to the last four or five, and they will want to get it done sooner than later because, you know, between now and the draft, it's not that far away. Most clubs are getting into their amateur meetings. Some are already finished up their pro scouting meetings. So that's work that you would want the new general manager to be heavily involved with and spearheading. And I got time for Ryan Johnson, the internal candidate in Vancouver as well. This young guy has been groomed to be an NHL general manager. It's up to Aquilini to decide whether or not he feels that he's ready, or he's draped or surrounded by individuals who can help him get to where he needs to be ready. So they're certainly nearing the final stages of that process in Vancouver.
Dregs, obviously it was confirmed yesterday what's been known for a while, or expected, I should say, for a while, about the salary cap upper limit being at $104 million. The one part that doesn't get talked about probably as much anymore is the floor at 76.9. Is there actually any news around the salary cap for you, whether it's this coming season or beyond? Like, are there any under the surface concerns right now with everything, or is everybody pretty good 1 through 32 in the NHL with how things are proceeding?
The commissioner would say that everybody is good. You know, the financial stability of all franchises has arguably never been better, and I believe that. That's not lip service. But Duffer, you asked the question in an appropriate manner in asking, you know, are there concerns? Okay, well, there are concerns. And there are concerns from some NHL owners that in the not too distant future, and this would be a good thing for players. I mean, the end of the day, the salary cap goes higher. The players get the same share, but you're talking about bigger dollars because the slice of the pie grows in financial terms. So is that going to encourage the haves and the have-nots? You're always going to have your cap-spending teams who, okay, you know, the cap goes to $130, $150 million. Well, they've got the revenue. They've got the hockey-related revenue to deal with that. You know, they're not worried about that. So they're going to spend their money on the top players, and they're going to try and build juggernauts. Not every team in the league can afford to do that. You know, not to go small market, because look, our eyes would glaze over if I even tried to explain what the new version of revenue sharing is. Like, there are so many twists and turns in all of this, but what it means is a team like Winnipeg, the smaller market teams, get a bigger chunk in different ways, which will help them through the stages of the salary cap going up. But at the end of the day, you still only have so many seats, and you can only go to the consumer in your smaller market and say, okay, we're raising season tickets and everything that goes into that. So those would be the concerns from an ownership level. And fellas, you'd be surprised at some of the owners who I've talked to about this, who you would think shouldn't be concerned with it, but they are.
Is Carolina a team that is going to be like pushing back a little bit when it comes to the growth of the salary cap, just because we know their owner and the way that they work is very stingy over there? I would think they'd be very vocal with that.
Yeah, I would think so too. But in full disclosure, I've never had this conversation with Tom Dunn, and I have had it with others. I mean, there's not too much about the workings of the NHL, particularly around that salary cap process, that he likes. You know what? I have time for Dunn's approach, because, you know, you're always going to find coaches who want to coach at the NHL level. He's got one of the best in the business in Rod Brind'Amour, who just loves that area. So, I mean, Rod could have made millions and millions more than he's making in Carolina and has made in Carolina if he was willing to move. He just likes what his family has in Carolina. I have time for that. You know, you think of Eric Tulsky. He's a sharp, sharp, sharp hockey guy. One of, if not the lowest paid general managers in the National Hockey League, but I'm sure he's very appreciative of the job that he has as one of 32 GMs. So Tom Dundon's a shrewd dude, as people in the NBA are starting to realize now.
Drakes, thanks so much. Enjoy the hot zone.
I will. I love that beard, Duffer. That playoff beard is something else.
It's envious. It is something. That is for sure. Thankfully, it's a little softer than it was a couple of days ago.
Yes.
Probably emblematic of how I feel about myself on a daily basis. Yes. Join us for the drive-through rally. It's presented by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, and it's happening today. You can roll through Topps Friendly Markets on Orchard Park Road in West Seneca from 4 to 6 to pick up your street sign. We will have Sabretooth there and an awful lot more. You can go to sabres.com/playoffs for additional locations and details, and we will dive into Hart Trophy finalists next.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Of course, we are running it back here in round two with the Saberhood Block Party for every home game. Fast approaching tomorrow's game two. Don't miss the party in the plaza starting at 4. Canalside Watch Party Zone at 5. It's not the hot zone. It's the Canalside Watch Party. And, of course, visit sabres.com/playoffs for more details and RSVP today. Darren Dreger was with us today, and we're looking forward to Shayna Goldman tomorrow. She will undoubtedly have strong opinions on award finalists. And earlier today, we learned that Rasmus Dahlin is a finalist for the Norris, one of three, with Makar and Werenski the others. The Hart finalists will be unveiled tomorrow. Who are your three?
So this is interesting, because the definition of the players voted best player in the league, the Pearson, or the Lindsay.
Ted Lindsay Award,
it used to be the Pearson Award, now the Lindsay Award, is different. It's the best player in the league. And then this is supposed to be the most valuable, and it's voted by two different groups, right? I personally think you've got a top four. You got McKinnon, McDavid, Celebrini, and Kucherov. One of them's got to be left out. It's like the process of elimination. I think McDavid gets left out.
For the Hart?
Yes.
There's no chance he gets left out.
Or maybe
for the
Celebrini, because they didn't make the playoffs.
There's no chance of that.
Okay, so it's going to be Kucherov, McDavid, and McKinnon, the top three, and Celebrini being out.
No. Is that your three? Have you narrowed
it down?
I'm going
to say that's my three. And people are going to say, because San Jose didn't make the playoffs.
My three are McDavid, Celebrini, and McKinnon. And so Celebrini would be number one if I had a vote. And I hope that he wins. And I have learned... maybe. We're always trying to learn. I feel like that was my instinct all year, was I couldn't believe what I was watching. And then, of course, public opinion and internal can sometimes sway you. And I got away from believing in it. And then I started reading more people saying, it's unreal what he's doing. And I was like, yes, it's unreal what he's doing. I think Werenski's a finalist for the Norris, and he wasn't, you know, on a playoff team. I think Celebrini should be the MVP.
And McKinnon and McDavid have the best odds. Celebrini is a plus 7,000.
Happy birthday, Tim Connolly and Chad Rewedel former Sabres in history, of course. Sabres live tomorrow on a game day, heading into game two. See you then.